Hello and welcome to House of Comments. As ever, I'm Charlotte Henry and she is Emma Bunnell. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Nice, another quiet week for us to dissect. You know, nothing going on either side of the Atlantic, really.
Yeah, it's been very, very quiet. I mean, to be honest, it's one of those weeks where I'm thankful I don't have any money, because if I had, they'd be in the stock market.
Right. Let's deal with Mr. President Trump and the US. The South Lawn of the White House now appears to be a car showroom.
Yes.
Sorry, that was weird, wasn't it?
I mean, it's the problem now is what isn't weird.
Okay, good point. Yep.
And so you're just going from levels of weird to levels of weird to levels of weird. When Trump and Melania launched meme coins in that period between the election
during the transition.
The inauguration, I was just like, they're just not even hiding the grift anymore.
No, no.
And it's the same thing. You know, if you are Trump's mate, he will literally flog your wares like it's QV bloody C.
It did look a bit like that, didn't he? He was standing there with his script, reading out the key talking points for Elon Musk and his child standing next to him. It was all very, very strange. And look, we could sort of have a giggle and a laugh about how weird it is. I saw a clip from
Corrupt
is exactly the word, yeah. I saw a clip from Rachel Maddow, obviously, that she was talking about. There's a huge database from the Department of Defense being removed for quote-unquote DI. One of the things being removed is a photograph of the plane that dropped the atomic bomb on
Japan. The Enola Gay.
Because it's called the Enola Gay.
Astonishing.
So that's America right now. Well done, everybody. And as you hinted at, we should say that there's been absolute tumult on the stock exchange, on the stock market.
Yeah, the stock market is dropping and dropping and dropping. And this is partly, you know, something we haven't even mentioned yet, Trump's favourite word, tariffs.
Tariffs, absolutely.
I think his favourite word is actually hokey-cokey. You put your tariffs on,
we're not doing it. Mark Carney, the new president, Prime Minister of Canada.
Governor
Mark Carney. He's done being governor. He's now...
He's been governor of the Banks of Canada and England.
Correct.
But as Trump lives entirely by meme...
he called Justin Trudeau.
And he kept calling Trudeau the governor of Canada because he's trying to meme Canada into being the 51st
state. Mark Carney is not having any of it, as you might imagine. Trump taking on a proper economist is going to be quite an interesting one to watch, I would say.
Yes. I mean, for those listeners who are lucky enough to be Patreon subscribers.
Yes.
And therefore listen to our fabulous episode about the West Wing.
Patreon.com/House of Comments podcast.
In many ways, isn't Mark Carney Jeb Bartlett brought to life? Because he's an economist.
It's a great point.
So, you know...
great point.
Okay, Jeb Bartlett was New Hampshire, but that's basically the Canada of America, isn't it? It's all maple syrup.
I think it's... Well, that's the title of the show. that's this week's episode named. There's a lot of comparisons. Go and listen to that show on patreon.com/House of Comments podcast to hear all our other links and, you know, comments on the West Wing and how it corresponds to politics at the moment and the frankly damage it's done to British politics in particular. But yes, so Mark Carney has become head of the Liberal Party and Prime Minister designate. I don't really understand, and we won't go down this rabbit hole too much, I don't really understand how he can have done this and not be an MP or never been an MP.
Well, it's different from the British system, is the simple answer.
Sure.
I mean, Trump was never a senator.
Sure, but that's a presidential system. Anyway, that is the reality of where we are, and that is going to be very interesting to see that dynamic play out. Have we missed anything else on President Trump? I lose track.
I mean, I'm sure we've missed 100 things because that's their strategy, isn't it? Flood the zone.
Indeed, indeed. But anyway, that's where we are. I think you mentioned the word corruption and I blazed past it, but I shouldn't really, because that is what, you know, outright is going on. A guy has given a lot of money to your campaign, so you start flogging his cars on the White House lawn. The only thing I will say that is kind of funny, and I think you as a committed environmentalist might find some humour in this, is that now the greatest act of right-wing rebellion is to buy an electric vehicle.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, like,
That's funny, no?
that's very, very funny. But even funnier is the fact that, as I understand it, something like 50%, maybe higher than 50% of Tesla ownership was registered Democrats.
I bet, yeah.
They were so coded to being woke. And your red-blooded Republicans were buying 4x4 trucks, gas
Sure.
guzzling, get
Absolutely.
2 meters for a gallon.
Totally.
But so Elon Musk has shot his traditional market in the foot. But I'm not being funny. I don't think a whole bunch of, certainly not enough to replace the customer base they had previously, like. You can go out and buy one Trump coin for like $76 or whatever. You are not going to go out and make a big purchase like a Tesla just because you really like President Trump.
Get a Cybertruck for Trump. Anyway, very interesting dynamics to play out. Let's head this side of the ocean because there's a hell of a lot going on here. So Keir Starmer, the reformer, Emma.
Well, yeah, I think he was always trying to pitch himself as that, less or more successfully at different times. But
Sure.
if you look at the kind of the narrative that he was setting out pre-election about his time at the DWP, about his time with the Police Service of Northern Ireland, both of those were, his pitch was, "I'm a technocrat that makes organisations work well."
Yep, I think that's fair enough.
Which is essentially a reform message.
Reforming as opposed to the party. Yes, indeed.
Indeed, yeah.
We're coming to them, don't worry, fans.
Oh, yes. We're saving that for last, like dessert.
We're saving that little treat for later. But yes, I think that is a fair comment that he has always at least tried to give the impression, whether people have bought into it or not is a whole different debate. But he has always tried to pitch himself as I'm a technocrat to change things for the better.
Yeah, and
That's
I
been his
think I've said this
pitch.
before. My favourite story about him in that book was his pride in changing up a database. As it,
Yes.
yeah, I love that for him, and I love, that
But
because that's the sort of
Emma,
thing that makes me
I was
happy.
going to say that's because you're just a massive nerd.
I am a massive, massive nerd, and I'm okay with that.
We're discussing this on the day. That he, well, both Sir Keir Starmer and Health Secretary Wes Streeting have announced that NHS England is basically going to be scrapped. It's going to come under central government control. I don't think you and I are going to dare pretend or even try to navigate the logistics of NHS organisation slash reorganisation. But Sir Keir Starmer's pitch is that it's coming under, quote, democratic control. A whole load of jobs are going to go. So that is quite an interesting approach. It's part of this whole sort of bonfire of the quangos approach the government is starting to take, which I guess in some ways should appeal to me, but it's kind of perplexing dynamics playing out both inside and outside of the Labour Party. First of all, do you have any particular take on this? Are you going to use the word subsidiarity? Where are we going?
I will always use the word subsidiarity. You know that.
I'm aware.
I've worn it on a t-shirt.
Actually.
I would actually wear that.
I know.
So I am old enough to remember the 1980s. I actually have quite a vivid memory having a conversation about quangos in primary school.
Literally no part of this surprises me.
And the left were really, really anti-Quango when Thatcher invented them, basically.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you because there's quite a lot to unpack there. The left's opposition, Margaret Thatcher doing things that by definition expand the state.
No, that was the reason for opposition.
Because she thought they were
Because
taking
they
things out of the
were,
state.
yes, they were anti-democratic, undemocratically controlled. They were not a proper part of the traditional state.
That's why the left opposed
And
them.
that's why the left opposed them.
Okay, fascinating.
So, it's nothing new under the sun. We just swap sides every now and again.
Sure.
Then, of course, Quangos grew and grew and became these quite large bodies.
I feel like that's a Tony Blair thing. Am I being unfair?
No, I think that's probably absolutely true. I think, well, as I say, they were established under Thatcher, grew a bit under Major. I think they probably ballooned because the same way as Thatcher didn't really want the state doing a load more stuff because he's not particularly a statist.
Well, he's in
But
some things.
not really. I mean, Blair's ideology is kind of, is it big, shiny, and techie? And if I don't understand it, it must be cool, as far as I can tell.
And have an ID card with it.
Yeah, but I don't think his instinct in favor of ID cards even was because he wanted state control.
No.
I think it's because it was a big, shiny technology.
I don't necessarily agree with you, but I'm sorry to keep distracting you. Continue. NHS England.
So there was a move towards this kind of body of regulatory expertise in almost everything that would oversee the practical implications of legislation, whether that be in building standards or in healthcare regulation, because NHS England was not really that. Come to that in a second. Or the way that charities are regulated,
Right.
or planning, all of these things got kind of pushed out into this space somewhere between the charity sector and the government sector and
Yes, there's a
started
sort
up.
of middle ground. Which can be good because it separates things, but also can lead to lots. And I think this is what you're hinting at, but please tell me if I'm wrong. It can also lead to things like a lack of accountability, things sort of disappear.
Well, there is the problem the left always had with it was that there was no direct democratic accountability.
And interesting you say that because, as I repeat, Sir Keir Starmer described this action as bringing it back under democratic control.
So let me slightly finish the whole history of Quangos because obviously I haven't lost enough listeners yet.
So I'll
So
make a cuppa, carry on.
basically, so that sector, then because it's not a business and not one of the traditional spaces like law or the city where you're more likely to find people on the right, got bigger, it got more empowered, and it got more and more associated with, and therefore people buy, and either a virtuous circle or a spiral, depending on your point of view, people who were like that. And so then the Tories, of course, hated it because a bunch of liberal lefty bedwetting regulators were telling them what to do.
I have to say, I have always associated Quangos with the left, and that I think does reflect, forgive me for pointing out, our different
The age,
ages
yeah,
and the different
absolutely.
times we've learnt and got engaged in politics. And I think that is something really interesting to pull apart from this conversation, actually. And of course, we should note that NHS England was given autonomy by
Andrew Lansley, which is the
Andrew
next part of the
Lansley.
conversation.
Right.
So Andrew Lansley overtly said that he wanted to stop the Secretary of State for Health having responsibility for things going wrong in the health service. If a hospital went bust, it should not, and had to close, it should not be up to the Secretary of State for Health. That is essentially, despite the fact that it was an enormous, enormous reorganisation, an enormous piece of legislation, that was the driving factor, was to get political decision-making out of the NHS. Now, what happened was that political decision-making did come out of the NHS. Political responsibility did not, because that's just not the way the world works.
No one is ever going to say, oh, I can't get a GP appointment. Oh, there's a massive lack of beds and waiting lists. Oh, that can't be the health secretary's fault. That is just never, ever, ever going to happen in real life. So
the situation we've ended up in is lots and lots of political blame, and fewer and fewer political levers for those being blamed able to pull.
Which apparently
is
something...
that's what I think they're trying to address with this measure.
And it's something apparently Conservative ministers, as I've been reading, did complain about. Interestingly, the Conservatives have all been all that opposed to this idea. This is the quote from the senior shadow minister, whatever that means, Alex Burghardt. Labour ministers now have nowhere to hide or anyone else to blame on NHS performance. If I were Wes Streeting, I'd take that as a compliment, because that's literally what the plan is
meant
to do.
That's what he's trying to do. Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. And again, if you were to ask those Tory ministers privately, is this the right thing to do? They would say, absolutely, we fucked up with Lansley really, really, really badly.
I mean, if you read any biography from that time, that is the general theme. The Liberal Democrat health and social care spokeswoman, Helen Morgan, welcomed the move, saying, you cannot fix the NHS without fixing social care, no matter how much unnecessary bureaucracy is slashed. Now, there is a constant conversation about social care as well that's been going on as part of this discussion of reform from Sir Keir Starmer and Wes Streeting, right?
Yes, and your Lib Dem woman ain't wrong.
No.
And I don't say that very often.
Especially not about, if you're talking about me.
Well, quite.
Not that I am a Lib Dem woman, but that's how you pigeonhole me anyway.
Absolutely. The NHS and the issues around social care are entwined.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you can fix them in tandem, or whether you focus on one first or the other first, is probably the decision making question that's happening whilst all the other things are going on. Personally, I think we should be doing more on social care earlier. I think this review that's being set up...
Bit long kicking into long grass, isn't it?
It does feel like it, yeah. Look, don't get me wrong, I bow to nobody in my respect for Louise Casey, but I'm not sure another review, even by someone as brilliant as her, is needed, given we've been talking about this stuff forever. I'm in favour of the changes they're making to the NHS.
You're okay
I'm
with
not
the,
completely
the NHS England
anti-Quango
thing.
At all, but I do feel like there are too many places where accountability might lie, and thus accountability lies almost nowhere.
Yeah.
So I think there is a way of trimming that down. I think that Andrew Lansley's reforms were disastrous and somebody had to grasp a nettle, and I'm glad that Wes Streeting's done it.
Yeah, I was opposed to the Lansley reforms at the time on one very simple proviso, actually, which was both parties, as I recall, especially went into government saying no top-down reform of the NHS. The Lib Dems always used to justify as this wasn't top down, it was bottom up, but that never really, it never really carried much water with me.
Yeah.
So that's where I came from on that particular issue all those years ago. Interestingly, all 404 Labour MPs have been asked for their presence at Downing Street for a welfare round table. So this is obviously something Number 10, Liz Kendall, Wes Streeting are trying to get a hold of. This is one of the issues, actually, that you mentioned it a few times in relation to austerity, but I think this is going to be an example from the Labour government, that you don't see the results right away. And it's going to take whatever this government does on social care, welfare reform, is going to take a long time to come out in the wash. And that's always a complicated thing to deliver and to navigate, actually, as both politicians and punters. And as journalists, I don't think we do a very good job of explaining that and contextualising that, because we're all now.
Yeah.
Now, I might want to have the go at the Labour government for all sorts of things. And when the details come out, maybe I'll do that. But I do think from a media perspective, we have to get better at saying, actually, you're not going to know about this next week. You're not going to know about this next year. You might not even know if this has worked by the next election.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think journalism used to think of itself as tomorrow's chip wrapper. Mm-hmm. And we've now got even shorter termists because of the internet and 24/7 news and what have you. And you need a story, you need a story, you need a story, you need a story to feed the beast.
Yep.
But some things just don't work that way. Most things just don't work that way. Not just in politics, in life. You know, if I were telling you about my latest romance, I don't have a latest romance, but you know what I mean. So you would get very annoyed at me if I sent you hourly updates about my you know, bloke I was seeing or whatever, because there just
that
would
might
not
be a bit much.
There just wouldn't be any news.
No, I'd like at least a week or two, a glass of wine, and then we could chat about it.
I'm not seeing anyone, by the way, folks, particularly men out there.
God, right, this has now become a dating service as well, has it? But I think it's a fair point. And another area that I mean, both of us are very passionate about is the planning system and planning reform, and try to help people get onto the property ladder who want to, and in most circumstances should be able to. For me, that's the key point. It's not that renting per se is bad. Yep. It's not that owning per se is the answer for everyone. The point is that there are too many people who could afford a monthly mortgage. We know this. We've both got so many friends and relatives who are in this position who could afford a monthly mortgage, may even be saving money by paying a mortgage, not rent, and yet find themselves in a position where they can't do that because the deposits still asked for are ridiculous. And a lot of that comes down to a lack of supply.
It's a lack of supply. It's a very odd financing system. Mm-hmm. It's heated areas of the country where markets are just crackers, but that's where the jobs are. There's all sorts of problems, and lack of supply is a big part of it. Lack of mix of tenure is another one. If we had more social housing of high quality, of high value, with people with long-term tenancies in it, there would be less competition in the market over what properties there were for sale.
Yeah, and I bring this up because earlier this week, the government has promise, quote, the biggest building boom in a generation, and they could do this through planning reforms. Do you get the feeling this week that this is the kind of thing? Why didn't I see Conservative ministers saying this stuff and doing this stuff?
Two reasons. Firstly, there is an awful lot of NIMBYism in the seats that Conservatives have traditionally represented.
Fair. Agree with that.
And secondly, if this works, and this is the bit that politicians aren't saying out loud, it will bring house prices down and the Daily Mail will scream bloody murder.
Because your property will go for less than it currently does if you want to sell it at a certain point. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And if you traditional party of landowners, which is what the Conservative Party are. I mean, you're talking very traditional, but that's what the word conserve means, then you do not want everybody owning property because they'd be owning it on your land. Now, Thatcher did try to develop, she right. called a property-owning democracy.
Yes, I was just going to mention that.
What she meant was a big selling off of the properties owned by the state. It was never, none of those reforms made it easier to buy private sector housing.
But do you understand the point I'm making there when I read these headlines and you sort of think planning reform, surely that should have been a conservative thing. Sorting out quangos and over-the-top bureaucracy in the health system, surely that should have been a conservative thing.
Again, I think they did do those headlines, certainly the quango ones. The bonfire of the quangos was quango, one of George Osborne's big thing. But there is a difference, I think, between an approach that says we have a bloated state that doesn't work very well and what we want is a state that works really well. An approach that says we have a bloated state that doesn't work very well and what we want is less state.
Yes, and I might have more sympathy for the latter.
Whereas I'm closer to the former.
Quite. But there's ways of presenting both those things. Yeah, and I think you're right that the Labour government is going for what you're saying, whereas not quite what where my instincts would be.
Yeah. But I think where your instincts were where George Osborne's instincts were, and they tried it, and it failed. It was one of those things. It fell very slowly and then very suddenly. And Labour's response to it was very poor because they acted like it fell very suddenly, and it just didn't. Austerity, the bonfire of the quangos, bonfire of regulation was not an immediate crisis, but was commsed by Labour as an immediate crisis.
Yeah, you mentioned...
But actually, it was a crisis that built up over time. So it's the reason we've got so much shit in our rivers. It's the reason that you can't sell a flat with cladding on it. It's the reason that Grenfell happened. You know, all of this, ripping up regulation, one-in, one-out rules, without any thought of first principles, what are the rules for? What are they designed to do? How can we do that better?
Yeah, and my sort of small statism is kind of what you're saying, that I think a small state is a more effective state, but the key word in that bit is effective.
Yeah.
Blowing things up for the sake of blowing things up, I don't think is right, but I think if the state does less, it can do that better.
I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't think a small large, same as a small and large corporation, they can do things well or they can do things badly. It's not the size that matters. It's the what they do and how they do it. Don't give me that look. That's not where I was going with that. For once, I was not making a dirty joke.
Right. Anyway, what I want to finish on was... said the word reform a lot in this show, but we haven't talked about reform. Goodness gracious me. How can a party with only 5 MPs be have multiple factions and internal wars?
Because it's a party led by Nigel Farage.
Is it as simple as that?
I think it really is as simple as that. Have you ever seen a party that Nigel Farage has been involved in that didn't fall apart in exactly this way?
I mean, he does tend to attract... drama, it's fair to say. Obviously, UKIP held up for quite a long time. Brexit Party did its sort of job, quote unquote. But, you know, this has been the ambition for Farage for all these years, to get him and others into Parliament. He's now got Lee Anderson as his enforcer. And, like, it's just chaotic. There's a thing, right, isn't there, that the less important something is... the more people argue over it. The classic example
is student politics.
Yeah. Right? People take it far too seriously because it's so unimportant.
Yeah.
And to some extent, the running of the Reform Party is like that, right? Because there are 5 MPs. Yes, they make political headlines and so on, but there's 5 MPs, there's 404 Labour MPs, there's 72 Lib Dems. The 100-odd Tory MPs are worried about these 5, but... frankly, the Tories got to sort other stuff out internally as well.
Now, Charlotte, I'm just going to pull you up on something.
Please.
Because we are a fact-based politics.
There
Depends. Are four Reform MPs.
There are now four Reform MPs. Sorry, I was talking pre-Rupert Lowe, but yes, you're right. There are now four Reform MPs because Rupert Lowe has been booted out of the party under some rather nasty allegations, you know, around, but we don't know if they're true or not. That will all come out.
So
but
here's one thing that we need to hold in our minds. And again, this is something journalism is bad at.
Mm-hmm.
It is perfectly possible to be true that Nigel Farage is a messianic, difficult leader who cannot lead a party, and can only lead a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And Rupert Lowe is a nasty piece of work who
has done XYZ wrong.
Who has done XYZ wrong. It is perfectly possible that Rupert Lowe is a nasty piece of work who has done XYZ wrong, but that his expulsion is happening because he's fallen out with Nigel Farage. All of these things do not have to sit. You don't have to choose one or the other with these things.
Yeah,
and I think too often the discussion around this is Nigel Farage right or is Rupert Lowe right? They're both wrong.
They could both be wrong. They could both be right. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a very well-made point. But I just want to have a giggle, to be honest, that I find this somewhat ridiculous, that they have got to a point where, having broken the boundaries they have, frankly, overtaken the public discourse far more than their representation deserves, and yet they're still having a scrap and a falling out.
Well, you know, they are the product of the people that are attracted to them. And these are people whose entire political career has been about falling out with other people on the right. I mean, that's just why they exist.
I guess so. I just find it bizarre that, having made this breakthrough moment, you can't all get in line. So, am I naive?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
On that. I mean, you're in general, I didn't mean that.
No,
quite so emphatic as a...
I asked because I wanted an answer.
These are not people whose political careers, styles, instincts are about getting in line. Think about the book that What's Her Awful Face wrote, The Bad Boys of Brexit. That's how they see themselves. They think they're the bloody Fonz.
You were referring, I believe, to Isabel Oakeshott.
That's the one. That
partner of Richard Tice of the Reform Party.
The truly patriotic woman who loves Britain so much she's gone to live in Dubai.
She has gone to live in Dubai and wrote and asked about that, yes.
So they do not... The idea of being collegiate is anathema to any of their sense of how politics has ever worked for them.
I guess ultimately that is what it comes down to. I just find it bizarre that, having made the breakthrough, they couldn't even last... How long have we done?
Not a
Nine
year.
Months? They haven't got through a year without having a massive bust up. And again, I think in some ways the smallness is part of the problem, right? So in a party of 404 MPs, if two people don't like each other...
It doesn't matter.
It sort of gets lost.
Yeah.
In the general noise.
They can sit on either end of the benches.
You just don't have to really interact. Even in a cabinet, you don't have to interact that much with people you don't like. Yet in a party of five MPs with, as you say, this really control freakery leader, you know, so many different egos at play. Lee Anderson, Nigel Farage, Rupert Lowe, Richard Tice. I've actually forgotten the other Reform MP, doesn't matter. It's... I thought I did well to name four out of five,
that's,
frankly.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I have no idea.
So, ooh, having got to that point with these egos, I guess it was always going to be a bit combustible. But anyway, Richard, you know, Rupert Lowe is no longer a Reform MP. Do you think this can...
James McMurdoch.
Thank you very much. Do you think this can be resolved and they can all come together again, or is Rupert Lowe now going to start an offshoot party as well?
I believe it's been said that there's no way back for Rupert Lowe.
Oh, dear.
So I think he's out of reform for good. Whether he'll be starting a new party, whether he'll just sit as an independent, who knows? I mean, frankly, I think I might have told you this story before, but I was on GB News. I was live on GB News when the news broke that Elon Musk had tweeted in support of Rupert Lowe over
Farage, yeah.
over Farage. And it was a very, very amusing place to be on that afternoon, because you can
I think
imagine.
I remember this.
And there was all sorts of comments. They love a viewer comment on GB News. And so there are all these comments coming in, go, yeah, Rupert, he's our man. It's obviously a bit awkward for GB News, given that Nigel Farage works for them. But my entire response, I mean, I was just having an absolute ball. I thought it was the funniest afternoon I'd ever spent there.
I remember this.
But my response was, I didn't know Rupert Lowe had that big a family. And they were like, no, people really know who he is. It turns out
Can I tell
polling
you
has
down if you
recently
see?
come out that about 87% of the British public have no idea who Rupert Lowe is.
I only knew who he was because he used to be the chairman of Southampton Football Club. So that's all I've ever known about
You and
him
Rishi
and
Sunak.
why I recognize the name. Yeah, absolutely. I suspect Rishi Sunak obviously would have supported them during that time. Anyway, I thought that was a fun way to end the show. Remind people where they can keep up with you, Emma.
You can read my Substack, which is The Political Human. And I'm also on all the social medias, but less often than I used to be.
Yeah, I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Please head over to theaddition.net where there are blog posts, podcasts, newsletters about the crossover of culture, media, and sport, which is what I often cover. If you want to get more from us, and really, come on, of course you do, and you get both of our newsletters for the price, please head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast for a mere fiver a month. You get to get extra episodes of this, as I say, get our newsletters and feel good about supporting some fascinating, fiery, female-fronted political debate. So I hope you'll do that. Really appreciate all your support, and we'll see you next week.